from season 2, episodes 6 and 7 are over. But guys, where are we? We are on the From podcast here on Post Show Recaps, covering the last 2 episodes of From that we've seen. I mean, over the last 2 weeks. It's not the last 2 episodes of From, thank goodness, but we are talking about episode 6 of season 2 and episode 7 of season 2. Pas de deux and Belly of the Beast, respectively. Hello, everybody. I am Josh Wigler, and I am joined here by a man who is the blood of my blood. Here he goes. My blood is your blood now, DM Philly.
My blood is your blood now, Josh. I'm ready for our little pas de deux. I'm excited to talk about these 2 episodes of From.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it is, right? It's a 2 for the price of 1. So it's a it is. Is that a pas de deux?
Yeah, it's a pas de deux. We're going to pas de deux. We're going to pas de deux. Yeah, I mean, there's something going on there. There's something.
Certainly something happening here. And by golly, if there isn't something happening in Frumsville, as we announced on our episodes 4 and 5 podcast, that we would not be getting back together until we got back together for episodes 6 and 7. And gosh, we were during that most recent podcast, Rich, being like, I hope that things pick up here pretty soon. And then who knew that the following week, Boyd would kill Smiley with worms.
Game on, Josh. This is a real game changer. Things got very exciting. I feel like we got good momentum out of episode 6 into episode 7. I am fired up for where we're going to the end of season 2.
I'm really happy with it. I thought that was wild. Not on my bingo card that the worms were going to get weaponized and that Boyd would be able to kill one. And I think that this was Jen in the Discord, I want to say. It could have been somebody else in the Discord who brought this up. But the idea that we were going to kill one of the monsters at some point this season.
I mean, like, we're killing the main monster, dare I say. This is like the marquee monster that we get with Smiley.
That's the deal. Like, that's the thing is, like, of all the monsters, yes, this is what Jen wrote in the Discord. Boyd killing one of them with his bloodworms is surprising. Him killing Smiling Guy is even more surprising. That's right. I mean, that's like poster child of the monsters has been taken out. That would be like if they killed Boyd.
It really would. It's really interesting, Josh, because I was like, I've been scouring the internet, digging around in Reddit, and there's the great beat in episode 9 of season 1 where Boyd's with Sarah in the woods before the spider bites happen, and he's talking about worms. And he's like, worms are gross, man. If you cut worms in half, they grow back into 2 worms. And there's this like worm illusion, the weaponized worms. I don't know, Josh. I don't know what to think. I was not anticipating it, but I love where we got, and I love the kind of questions it leaves us with coming out of that.
Yeah, okay. So let's get into these episodes. We've got 2 episodes to discuss, and just sort of in a gist, the Boyd storyline involves him losing his mind more and more and more, seeing things that aren't there, though apparently other people are starting to see them too, namely this dancing ballerina figure who may or may not be a monster or may be some sort of guardian angel. I don't know. It is telling Boyd something that Boyd only can really seem to grok, which is there may be something funky going on with your bloodworms. And Boyd is going to have this moment where he needs to give a blood transfusion to his son, Ellis, who has been accidentally stabbed in like the chest, which is not a great place to accidentally stab anybody, Rich, if you're going to accidentally stab anybody at all.
No, it felt really bad, the chest stab. At least it was a small knife. We got really lucky there that he was cutting celery with such a small knife.
For sure thought we were about to lose Ellis, which was going to be a lot to handle. So I'm glad that we didn't, but Boyd needed to get rid of the worms first, and he kind of figures that, okay, well, the worms were given to me by that dude, Martin, and so maybe I can give the worms to somebody else. And Kenny, who seems to be slowly thawing in his relationship with Boyd, offers to take them, but Boyd has another idea, and he walks outside, and he cuts his hand open, and the monsters do their slow-walking monster thing, and they surround him, and Boyd cuts his hand open. He's bleeding. He cuts Smiley's throat. Smiley loves this thing. Boyd presses his hand up against Smiley's throat, has the line of the show when he says, your blood is my blood now, mother fracker. And Smiley like explodes. Basically, all of the juice is dried out of Smiley, and he's turned into some sort of feral monster state. and he's dead. And the other monsters look at him like, we should get the hell out of here.
Yeah, they stop smiling real quick, Josh. Yeah. They give each other the look of like, oh, man, we don't know how to process that. This is new. We got to roll out. I love the like small beat of like, oh, this is fun. Smiley not reacting at all. And like the kind of, you know, the play into the jump scare of Boyd, like, oh, this is not working. I did think it very pointed that as Donna is like pickling food, where she's using salt, which you use as like a preservative to pickle food, that we end up with these like kind of mummified remains in the thing after the fact. I know we're reaching into episode 7 a little bit, but here's my big question for you, Josh. So he obviously lays Smiley out, he kills him, he transfers the worms. My blood is your blood now, but are his worms Smiley's worms? Because Ellis will get the blood transfusion.
Right.
But very notably, earlier in the episode, Boyd takes a spill when he sees the ballerina, he cracks his head open. Kenny grabs the back of his head and gets his blood all over his hand.
I know.
So is it like a little bit of like a magic spell thing? Do you need to say the magic words to transfer the worms? Is it like authorization, or do we think that all three of these guys, that Boyd, his actual son, and his surrogate son, are all infected with the magic blood worms?
Yeah, so I think that it would make a lot of sense for other characters to have the blood worms now, right? Like, I feel like that tracks, that other characters would have the blood worms, because what are we going to do? As we go into episode 7, and the big deal this episode is sort of like from ER, and like we have to like Smiley's anatomy, and they have to like saw him open like Charles Dance and Ripley at the start of Alien 3, and they like cut into the chest, and they come to find that this thing has human organs and used to be human, and Christy's freaking out because she really needs this to work, and they're able, and she's just like pounding on the chest, Jack Shepherd on Charlie style, she just releases the goo, the bile, the gallbladder, the sludge, I believe is what that's called, and they take the bile and they get a good little bit of bile. But there's no scientists around who are going to be able to turn this into worm weapons, right?
I know he's technically an engineer, but Jim Matthews might argue that he's a scientist. In from a certain point
good
of view,
good Lord,
Josh.
If Jim Matthews, if our hopes are on Jim, who I think we need to start calling Dim Matthews, I'm not so sure, Rich. I'm really not so sure. So it would make a lot of sense to me if the worms, some of them got into Kenny, some of them got to Ellis, but if, to your point, it has to be some sort of freaky deaky glyph, magical word nonsense, then maybe they do have to just like spelunk Smiley for all the bile he's worth.
So the other big notable thing that leapt out to me is like this classic like kind of Greek idea of the humors of the body.
Yeah.
Like comes from Hippocrates, right? And the idea that there were these like four humors which controlled the influence of your body, its emotions. And bile is like pretty important because that's two of your humors, yellow bile, black bile. This is very like old weird science, but it feels like we're tying into the same kind of like old mythology and sort of, you know, these strange ideas from the past that we're exploring. So the bile seems like super relevant in terms of like it being weaponized, but the blood getting like transferred around all over the place, like very notable in the midst of Boyd's worm weapons.
Okay, so what about this? Let's talk this through. Let's say that Boyd's blood weapons now exist in Kenny and exist in Ellis, just for argument's sake. We don't know that this is actually how this is going to go. Mm-hmm. It would be pretty amazing if Boyd was able to just like that quickly transfer all of the worms to Smiley, though I guess that Martin was that quick in transferring them over to Boyd.
I guess so, but how much blood did Martin have left in that body? He was a bit of a raisin himself. My man looked pretty like salted, dehydrated, pruned out after the ages, you know?
I feel like that is right. And like maybe was on his way towards becoming a monster. And it was just like the worms keeping him from reverting into like dried out husk monster shape. Because I do feel like this episode makes it pretty clear that the monsters were humans once upon a time.
Oh, for sure. That seems like the same exact interpretation that I had, right? And this idea that Boyd posits that, like, the worms are living inside of me. They were living inside of Martin. They're feeding on him. They were feeding on him, and they wouldn't let him die, right? Boyd, at least, like, has internalized the concept that, like, Martin's whole kind of, like, torturous life there and his, like, begging wish for death is related to the worms living in him, that the worms were the cause of this illness that he saw in this guy. So this is a pretty frightening notion. But it just when you look at the relationships, right, of like Ellis as his actual son, Kenny as the surrogate son that have been estranged, right? And now like they're bonding a little bit as Boyd seems ill and Kenny's seeing the same kind of failings in Boyd that he saw in his biological father. Yeah. This like pyramid of relationships feels like there's something there that made me think more about the blood transfusion of it all.
Yeah, so I think that that would make sense if they've got the blood weapons, and maybe could there be some other discovery that comes of the bile? Like, is the bile not going to be the thing that they are going to like distill that tiny little amount of like monster elixir into their hope against fighting these things? Is there something in there that they can examine to understand the physiology of the monsters better? Is there something that like maybe because this episode did not, I was a little surprised that this episode made it clear that Jade can like purify alcohol.
He can work it on the still.
Like, what can this man not do? Is he going to be able to do something with the bile? And like, what kind of reveal would come of that? So I feel like the blood goes into two different people, and Boyd still has some of it. And that's going to be the thing that happens there, whereas the bile could open a door to a different direction. I don't think that this is where it's going to go, but this was just a thing.
I don't either. It's very fun to talk about, though. Like, there's part of me that looks at, I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but through episode 7, notably, Boyd is, like, not hallucinating ballerinas in music boxes, sure, right? And so, like, it is the question of, are the worms purged? Is this, like, a paradigm shift? I can very much see the scene in, like, episode 8 coming up where Boyd's going to take that vial of bile and just knock it back. Like Jade and his moonshine over at the bar, right? And be like, okay, I've got this. I mean, it like maps to Boyd like throwing himself out the door at the end of episode 6 as he's right. Like, wait, I've got an idea. What I did love is ultimately he articulates everything about the worms, right? That's the other part of it that he's revealing to people. Hey, something happened to me. I'm infected with worms. And I know you think I'm crazy, but it really happened, right? And Khatri kind of calls him out about that in the basement, like, hey, buddy, this is growth. The Boyd that I knew never would have like admitted weakness or asked for help. And so at least the idea of the worms has been shared, if not the worms themselves, right?
Yeah. I hope that he didn't purge himself of Ghost Khatri.
I know. That's like the real worry, right? Is that if the worms are gone and the visions are gone, we're going to lose Ghost Khatri, who's like one of our favorite characters.
Not
the
okay.
Show,
Josh. Yeah, that's
I'm
not
really
okay.
Like opposed to that, unless Ghost Khatri shows up for like the other worm infectees.
Yeah, maybe like Mariel is going to start seeing Ghost Khatri because Mariel seems to be having visions that are similar to Boyd's visions. She has this terrible dream in episode 7, and in episode 6 into episode 7, we learn that she has a substance abuse problem and she relapsed while Christy was gone after being sober for some time. And we, of course, knew that she was taking medicine out of the medicine cabinet. And so this all comes out into the open. And while she's going through withdrawal, she has this fever dream featuring herself, Boyd, and a still alive Smiley, and Boyd holding out the gun and Smiley alive in the infirmary. And she sees the dancer too, right?
Yeah, she hears the music boxes like playing. She even says like, your buddy Boyd has like infected me with his dreams, right?
So like, did Boyd infect people by proximity? Like how did that How did the dancer contagion spread, I guess, the question I have.
Okay. So now, like, holistically, as we're talking about both these episodes, right, we end up closing out episode 7 with this, like, very kind of powerful shot, Elgin in the bathtub, and this scary woman comes looning down over him, right? Yeah. We identified a couple episodes. I'm going to forget her name, but our dancer in the rain, Josh, this cancer patient off the bus who has been traveling around, and she very notably is like, hey,
Tilly.
I've got this bottle. Tilly is her name?
Yes. A prankster, this Tilly.
I'll never forget it again. Tilly the prankster as she dances in the rain. But I was clocking that she gives Christy this bottle of morphine, which ends up in the drug cabinet, which ends up in Mirallyn's hands. Like she takes that morphine and kind of like squirts herself with it last time. And she's going to cop to like, hey, I did take some of the morphine to help like get myself down and through these withdrawals. Right. So this is like a lot of ideas at once, Josh. But as we see this very gaunt, skeletal-looking woman who does not resemble the other monsters that we've seen so far in the house with Elgin in the bathtub during the daytime, presumably. And I know you had identified this question of like, do we trust Tilly? Our boy Randall says to Jim, hey, man, if this is an experiment, probably there's a mole in the building.
Right, yeah.
So if Tilly is a mole, has something to do with the kind of nefarious agents at play here, and that morphine that got put in the medicine cabinet and was imbibed by Mira Ellen is somehow infected, then that could be leading to the hallucination somehow. This is a very far way to go to get there. But like, I'm connecting a lot of like disparate Lego pieces that I'm finding scattered on the floor, Josh, and like,
no, but I like
building
it.
My own crazy radio tower on the roof, you know?
Well, so I do think that if we're now going to move into Mole Patrol a little bit, which I'm down with, and this conversation that happens between Jim and Randall when they go to the RV and Jim wants Randall's help to use the drone with the radio parts for what? Like to get like a higher signal? Is that sort of the idea?
You need like clearance, right? You get a cell phone tower. You need to get that thing up over the tree line. I mean, Jim almost killed himself trying to put it up on the roof, right? So if you can get a drone with an antenna on it way up in the air, presumably you can fire your signal a lot farther without any kind of interference.
Okay, so they're going ahead to do that, but then Randall's like, all right, well, have you ever stopped to think that if this is an experiment, they would want to control? And so somebody in here is probably working against you. And this show has introduced a lot of ideas that have not borne out, and that's totally fine. I like that this is a show that throws a lot at the wall, but this feels like a big one to throw at the wall. And now suddenly you have to start thinking about who could be in on it, who of the cast could be in on it. And so just to go through it a little bit very quickly, it ain't Boyd. Boyd's our guy. Boyd's our main character. Let me just take a moment to give enormous shouts to the great Harold Perrineau, the legend.
Oh my gosh, let's, please.
The star Harold Perrineau, who is an incredible actor who is being utilized beautifully, at least here on From.
I'm so grateful that we get to hang out with Harold Perrineau every week and watch him showcase this show and lead this show as like, the point man of this ensemble.
Yeah, this season.
He really is. Like you can pick nits about From, but Harold is like extraordinary. It's a great performance. He comes correct in every scene, and it's a lot of fun.
His scene in the diner with Tian Chen, as short as it was, just the emotionality on Boyd. He's just so good. Like he's like, and I mean this lovingly, he's almost too good for this show, so good. So it's not Boyd. It's not going to be Jim or Tabitha or Julie or Ethan. They were our entry characters into showing up here in Frumsville. I don't think it's going to be Jade. The only thing that I would allow if it were Jade was like some measure of forgetfulness in waking up in Frumsville, but I feel like we've been riding with him too much as a POV character for him to turn out to be a mole. I don't think that Donna is going to be somebody that makes a lot of sense if she is a mole.
She's too angry and frustrated at the situation. I think she's playing it too well to be the mole. I'm with you there.
I think like there's just like it would if she's the mole, then she has snowed me. And I think of the people that we have mentioned so far, she is the likeliest, but I still think like relatively unlikely. Unless Victor has been really fooling everybody, which would be wild if it's like some sort of like verbal Kent reveal.
So my idea about Victor, I think that Victor is most at risk because he could easily be snowed, right? He could be the mole without knowing he's the mole. Victor seems to me like an agent that would be easy enough to manipulate, given his kind of innocence and the whole childlike perspective that he has on the world, that he might in fact like be playing that part without ever realizing he's playing that part, right?
That would be what it would be. If there is somebody who is a control here and Victor, let's say the monsters are all of the people that Victor arrived with, and Victor is the one who has been left alive, could he be deliberately left alive? Like you're to grow up here and like you are something that is here all the time. And that could make some sense. It's not Kenny. We're too in Kenny's sad head. it's not Christy. We're too inside Christy's tortured head. I think the same for Fatima. I think the same for Ellis. Sarah's whole deal, if she's the control, then they really messed that up. So I think like those are the main season one characters. Tian Chen of the season one cast, I guess, would be some version of a candidate, though it's a little harder for me to see. She's just the one of the season one cast that we hang out with the least. So I would put her on the list. All of that is to say that the season two characters, we are just learning about them for the first time right now. So right now it is an open possibility that one or more of these people could be quote unquote in on it. Mary, we know a decent amount. Bacta, I feel like we've gotten enough backstory from her and her righteous anger that I feel like it's not terribly likely. Elgin is the dreamer, so maybe Elgin could be in on it in the sense that Victor is.
Something he's got to remember that he can't, right? This notion of like the dream and something at the edge of his mind that he's reaching for and trying to hold on to. Just to touch on Elgin while we're like mentioning him, but I saw this amidst my scouring of the internet as well. Notably, when he shows up on the bus, he's got the shirt, it's got the raven on it. There's a great beat about how his name is kind of like a portmanteau between these two interesting names, that the second half in Norse mythology, Odin's ravens, Hugin and Mugin, which end in IN. The first half, Elijah, leave here, turn eastward and hide the Kareth raven east of Jordan. So you have like these ties with the ravens and his naming conventions that is really interesting that I just clocked, but I don't think it's Elgin either. I'm feeling real sus on Tilly, Josh.
I think so. I think when you look at the people who came in, we know too much about Mary now. We know too much about Elgin. Randall, I think, is the person who posits this. So, you know, whoever smelt it, dealt it, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, but I don't know that that's what his whole deal has been. Tilly is the one who seems the most sus of the season two, of the bussies.
Dare I like speculate baselessly, right? But like a lot of people got killed at the end of season one, right? It's a very like, if some outside force does want a mole here and the mole was inadvertently snuffed in the massacre, like you would want to bring a new one in, right? But as we see this like really gaunt, terrifying and distinctly different looking supernatural figure looming over Elgin in the end of episode seven, it could easily be a dream or like a vision that he's conjuring in his mind. But I very much could see a world where that is some iteration of Tilly, right?
Yeah.
And I'm feeling like all these questions about Tilly, what's up with the morphine? Where has she been? She is not on screen for an instant across these last two episodes, which feels like just terribly conspicuous to me, Josh.
Yeah, I think so as well. So Tilly, I don't know. My question that I have for you, Rich, is how much credence are we putting into the it's an experiment idea at all? We've just spent a good amount of time doing mole patrol with the people of Frumsville, but are we thinking that any of the Jim Matthews theorizing is going to bear out, or is every other character who is experiencing some form of supernatural thing enough evidence to the contrary that this is some sort of science experiment?
No chance. There's zero chance it's a science experiment whatsoever. This is an absolute no. Like, sure, AI, aliens, like, it's not the government. It is definitely not the government. I think Jim Matthews, you're getting this really fun dynamic with Jim and Tabitha, like the man of science, wife of faith kind of exploration that we're crashing into. And I think that Jim just has like, you know, drank his own Kool-Aid. He's high on his own supply and he's spiraling out of control in this one direction, right? He's this such a man of reason, an engineer. He has to like build things that like literally fit together. The math proves out, the science proves out. And when you are faced with no logical recourse, a man of logic will like find himself grasping at straws. I think Jim's like spiraling out a little bit. And this is like the manifestation of his obsession, right?
Yeah. What's going to get him to believe? Is he going to believe, or is he not going to live long enough to believe?
Is he going to like get Charlie'd? I saw that as like some interesting speculation out there on the internet, that Jim Matthews' story is going to be the story of Charlie, the man in the Polaroid from Victor's youth that like kind of loses his mind and fixates out on the symbol and spirals out of control. Like, can Jim get a hold of himself? Can he rein himself in? Now you got him buddied up with Randall, which feels like really bad combination.
Toxic combo.
Like, yeah, this is gasoline and matches, right? Like, these two guys probably going to like really egg each other on in a really negative way. So I hope well for Jim Matthews. God knows I love Ian Bailey. I really hope that Jim doesn't totally lose it, but I'm a little bit worried for him, man.
I'm a little worried for him as well. So I don't think so. I think like you could imagine a scenario where he and Randall go and try to do some stuff. And then there's some sort of like irrefutable divine intervention that Jim sees that brings Jim to the side of everybody else. Who's like, yeah, see, we told you there's stuff out here that's just like outright bad, man. So I don't know. I hope that Jim figures it out before it's too late.
Is he going to have to see like Randall get eaten by one of the monsters firsthand up close and personal, something like that?
He'll still be like, I read the Spider-Man comic books. This is a Dr. Kirk Connors situation. Really? These are just a bunch of lizard people.
Is this a Dr. Kirk Connors situation? That would really blow my mind if this is a Spider-Man crossover. Get me a McGuire or a Garfield or something in here. Stat.
Yeah, I feel like all of the monsters were amputees who had their limbs regrown with reptilian DNA, and as a result became all the more monstrous, except maybe instead of reptilian DNA it's worms.
You cut them in half and they grow two worms. They're gross. Worms are gross, Josh.
Yeah, when you talk about it like that, then I feel like Boyd's still having some worms in his blood.
I think there's something going on there. You know, it feels notable. I wonder like how much of the show it knows where it's going when they're writing this stuff. As they're closing out season one, do they even know they have a season two coming? But obviously you're able to go out and build like retroactively off the lines you already put there. But the choice of worms felt really notable. This idea that they are regenerative and the way that Boyd is talking about, they kept Martin alive, even though they like ate him from the inside out. Again, the pickling of the vegetables alongside the kind of like pickled body and the kind of like desaturated, dehydrated body that felt like it mapped. There was something there to me. So feels creepy, man. That's all I know.
Feels real creepy. While we're on creepy, do you have like who is the dancer theories? Thoughts on who the dancer is?
Great question.
I mean, it's a new one. There's nothing ballerina-ish I can recall from up until this point.
No, when Boyd...
We've been seeing the music box. The music box.
When Boyd ends up in like the dungeon or whatever, the building with Martin, and Martin's like, you need to leave before the music stops.
Right.
And then he kind of doesn't, and then he ends up infected with the blood. So I wonder how much of it is just like a creepy thematic motif that we can play with to kind of communicate to us, right? The ballerina seemed clearly across those three scenes to be trying to like get Boyd's attention, right? She pulls him into this dance, this pas de deux, the name of episode 6, pas de deux. It's a French term for a ballet, for a dance performed between two people, a pairing of dancers, usually between a man and a woman, a duet, as it is done in like many famous ballets. So she winds him into this dance, and across their interactions, like she extends the arm out and shows him the arm. She gives him the Last of Us treatment of like, my mycelium mouth, like let's make out a little bit. I mean, it's all there. It seems like just a very formidable and creepy imagery to communicate what we need to Boyd. In the same way, a lot of like the symbology across season one seems to have been like discarded a little bit, but it's a powerful motif to present on the television medium to get us engaged, right?
Okay, so follow-up question.
Yes.
Get out of here before you hear the music, right? That would be bad if you are here when the music starts playing.
Yes.
Boyd is hearing the music, but is able to eject the worms from his system. And at least one episode removed from that, he's not seeing the ballerina. He's not hearing the music anymore. Marielle is hearing the music. Mary has the music in her head. If you stick around the music long enough, does the music turn you bad? And does the music turn you into some form of creature? And whatever it is the music does, is it nefarious? And if so, are we looking at the off-ramp for Mariel here in season 2?
I wouldn't be surprised if this is going to end poorly for Mariel, especially given the like bit of reconciliation and the kind of bonding moment we get between Kenny and Christy towards the back half of episode 7. Like,
Kenny needs to pull it together. I gotta tell you,
I know Kenny's spiraling now, man. Yeah. Kenny, like, he rises to the occasion. Boyd's like,
he's fumbling
his way through the diner. He like he does what he needs to do. He gets Boyd to Christy, and I'm like proud of him for that. But Kenny Kenny is like not coping well with his reality at all. I feel like it ending badly for Mario would like really track for me in terms of the like trajectory of all these characters, just like arbitrarily, right? Uh-huh. But the worms, the music, I'm so curious. You know, part of what I was thinking about with the music stopping to this other beat that we get across these episodes, the trees are changing, Josh. The leaves are changing. There is this transition.
Huge
into fall.
Dream Theater is a change of seasons. Gonna score the entirety of the next episode of From called Forest for the Trees. And, at least the fall sweep of a change of seasons will be part of that.
Yeah, right. This is like, yeah, just a big leap. But I like think of like the music, the ballet, the four seasons. Like, I don't know. This transition into fall, notably of all seasons, which is like the resting time, the beginning of like the death of all of this life in the summer. Like, it has seemingly been trapped in this perpetual summer in Frumsville since Victor got here a long, long time ago, right? And like, they have this bountiful perpetual harvest, right? The food is dying. That's the thing Don is talking about, that the ground is poisoned. And you know what lives in the ground, Josh? Worms. And so like the worms maybe not being in the ground where they're supposed to be, and in the people, it could be like impacting the soil. These are all like disparate ideas that are like kind of like flooding me as I'm considering the music and the metaphor of it. Like, how literal is that? How much is it that the music is like going to make Marielle and like kind of crazy or drive her to her end? Or how much of it is like a metaphor for like the music of this community and like the harmony of like the seasons moving, right?
So you touch on the trees, and the trees are dying, and it's great to see Ethan and Victor back together again. I thought that their reconciliation was hilarious.
What's the point of being friends if we can't be friends, Josh?
Yeah, I like Victor being like, marker sucked. It was dry. It was a bad gift.
That was a bad gift. The orange was dry. And Ethan's like, what? The orange was dry. The orange marker. Like, oh, God.
He's like, I guess you can help. I guess you can help. And so, like, now not only are the trees moving, but the leaves are falling as well. And this is likely going to be the subject of next week's episode. Forest for the Trees is the name of it. So you got to imagine we're going to get into a little bit more of the tree stuff. But okay, so if the trees are changing, and if the flora of Frumsville is dying, a lot of different questions, and I don't even want to get into the colony house bit yet, but I do want to get into the colony house bit soon. Okay, so there's food is a problem.
Yep.
Are faraway trees going to be an issue? Is something going to change about the faraway trees if the bush is dying, Rich? What do you think about something happening with a faraway tree? Could a faraway tree eject someone out of Frumsville?
That is a great question. Something that I was thinking about this week, Josh, that I don't know that we discussed in our previous podcasts, is this whole notion of the faraway trees and ultimately what brings everybody to Frumsville, the fallen tree in the road, right? This tree in the road that traps them there, and the notion of like, is that a faraway tree pulling them in? Did that thing break? Is that like part of the system? It just like really kind of like hit me dead between the eyes this week as I was pondering from in between episodes, as it were. But the transition from summer into fall into winter is like a really notable transition for trees. Fall, it's like they're not dying, but they are going into the sleep mode, right? They find this kind of like rest. Their like whole internal cycle slows down. And as somebody that lives and dies by firewood, I know like that the trees in the fall are very different than the trees in the summer. So I can't help but think that like they're a little bit less malleable. The sap's flowing a little bit slower. Like, it would be a little bit less likely that something could move through them. Like, literally in the winter months, things are moving through them less slowly. They like constrict the arteries within themselves to like kind of slow down the movement, and they create these chemicals inside of them that to like preserve themselves through the winter. So a change feels like really relevant. As we see the trees physically changing outwardly, I would imagine there's an impact on the teleportation here for sure.
So that could be very compelling to see how that shakes out. So let us get into the food fight that seems like it is happening. You know, it begins in episode 6 with I'm not getting the guy's name who stabbed Ellis.
I think it's Dale. I think his name is Dale.
Let's just call him Dale. Dopey Dale, who is going to stab Ellis in the heat of the drama. The one shot of in the perspective of the van as Ellis Elgin is driving it to the infirmary, by the way. Very Children of Men of you from.
It was very Children of Men. I love that you flagged it. It was so great, right? It felt like so striking. It felt like a real pivot. Like, yeah. Elgin rising up for the hero moment. Meet me at the stairs. This, like, yes, this go Elgin.
In the conversation for one of the best sequences of the whole show.
No question.
Episode 6 is in the conversation for one of the best episodes of the whole show.
No question. I agree. You know, I really like I like the one the scenes that stand out to me are like the crashed RV, yeah. I talked about a lot. I love them like kind of buried underneath the house. These real like harrowing high stress circumstances amidst the chaos of what's happening around them feel fantastic. And the way they captured that one shot was great, man.
Unbelievable.
As somebody again that like lives in the woods and drives around on a lot of trails in the darkness with nothing, no more light than my meager headlights through the branches, like it felt very real and present. I was there. I'm with Eldred, like, wait, where am I going? Where's the road? Which way is this grass? Oh my god, a pothole, monsters are chasing me. Ah, it was a great sequence.
Eldred's a king. Yeah. Elgin's a king, and if anything happens to Elgin in the bath, I would be so upset.
Oh no, I'm gonna be mad. Yeah.
So that's the escape from Colony House, and then Ellis is gonna be patched up, but this drama is not patched up, as even though Dale is on house arrest, he is he's still like talking about, you know that I'm right, that there's too many of us now. We got to kick the bus people out of here. We're not going to be able to feed everybody. And it doesn't seem like that is exactly landing with Donna, though it doesn't also, you know, I'm not convinced that Donna isn't thinking about it. But I do wonder what kind of Colony House civil war are we in for, and what level of disaster will spiral out of that? Because the stakes at Colony House are very high. It's not just that the bussies are under threat as the new people on the block here, who are, you know, suddenly a bunch of hungry mouths to feed. But now Fatima has extra mouths to feed, as she, against all odds, because she is supposedly unable to get pregnant, has gotten pregnant here in Frumsville. Ellis is going to be the father, and she thinks that this is all just another version of the place contorting and twisting nightmares here. And Donna's like, no way, this is going to be fine. This is a thing worth celebrating. Meanwhile, I'm here like, nah, I think Fatima's probably right, because nothing ever goes well for the people here. But there's so much at stake at Colony House that if some sort of food fight civil war breaks out, Rich, it's going to be a big problem.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're not even at the like actual rationing food war yet. Everybody's still having pancakes for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It seems like three meals a day, right? There's a whole like toy box filled with potatoes in the Matthews basement. It's not that bad yet. And Dale's like knifing people that he's lived with for months. He's trying to throw poor Elgin and back to out of the house like food thieves. I mean, Dale's like completely out of control, but the tension ratcheting up feels like very palpable. And Donna's like a glass half full person. Perspective. My gosh. I mean, like, way to maintain a relentless, like, pace of hope, Donna. I really am inspired. This whole, it's a great line. Miracle's just the other side of a nightmare. She's got this whole great little monologue as she's talking to Fatima about, like, seriously, after everything you've seen, and some of it lands with me. Even as the skeptical viewer, I'm like, oh, God, Donna, don't do this to me. Don't give me your hope. As she's talking about, like, after all the horrible, unrelenting, and impossible things we've seen. Is it that hard to imagine that, like, there might be an impossible thing that is not bad? Like, are we just assuming that every impossible thing is actually horrific because that's the way it's been? It really mirrors what Ethan is talking about with Victor earlier, where he's like, Victor says the trees have never changed before. When things change here, it's usually bad. And Ethan says, but if this has never happened before, maybe it's good, right? So there's this little bit of like, you can't know until you do element to what Donna and even Ethan are saying, but it feels a little bit dangerous, right? And Fatima just like can't even begin to like intellectualize or conceptualize the truth of this. She like refuses to tell Ellis what's going on because of her fear for what's happening here. Notably, Josh, episode 7 named in the belly of the beast.
Yes.
We're gonna cut Smiley open to get the bile, but like, it seems relevant to me that we get this whole central pregnancy storyline happening around the episode named In the Belly of the Beast as well.
Well, the thing that scares me as a premise is the idea that, like, could any of these people be monsters and not know it? Like, could Fatima be a monster and not know it? Or could she be pregnant by virtue of the place? And is this going to be some sort of like Damien omen type deal that's going to like, is something dark incubating within Fatima? So I don't know. The whole thing is very scary. The whole thing is very loaded. And suddenly Fatima being pregnant, especially after Ellis has just had this near-death experience that I feel like at least buys Ellis some, like, he's going to survive the season, would be, if not the show. Yep. I feel like would be my guess that, like, Fatima would be the one at risk now. And so I don't like it with things being so shaky at Colony House. I don't know that I would love it if every single season ends with Colony House having some kind of major disaster, but...
The other side, I might actually love it if this Colony House gets like leveled at the end of every season. Like, oh, it's episode 10. Time for the Colony House party. It's the Colony House party episode. We love that.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, so a couple of other things that I wanted to hit before we closed out. One is there's not really a ton to get into other than the fact that Jade and Tabitha are now sharing information, and that's good. Two heads better than one, and I feel like Jade and Tabitha could be a pretty fearsome twosome, Rich.
Well, it felt relevant to me that Jade definitely goes back and like recounts every one of his experiences, right? Mm-hmm. First, it was the guy shoved in the armoire, died by a rock, then the Civil War soldiers, right? And then Tabitha's just talking about the kids. Like, it's always the same thing, the creepy kids. The idea that they're beginning to really communicate the information amongst one another. It's not just the two of them, right? Elgin is talking to Julie about his dream. Boyd's telling everybody about the worms. Like, we're getting some information exchanged, which feels really good. But certainly Jade's like big brain with like his newfound alcohol flowing freely through him alongside Tabitha. This is an interesting dynamic. More Jade, please. Like, that's my from notes of the last two episodes. I really do just love this guy, Josh. He brings this like effervescent energy and it's just delightful to like have him amidst the horror of the show. I love it. I love Jade.
The other thing I wanted to bring up is Elgin in the bath, which we've touched on a bit. And I think even more important than Elgin, like what happens at the end of the episode, is that Elgin feels very strongly that there is something he is supposed to remember, and it's very important. It's almost like he's having this Desmond-esque experience where he seems to be like seeing things happening, where he's like visiting images and places and stuff is starting to connect, but that there is this like one thing that he doesn't know. What do you think it is? Are there seeds planted for what you think Elgin has to remember?
So again, when we talk about like this, his name being derivative of both Elijah, mm-hmm. Odin, Hugin, and Mugen, like Odin's whole deal is like, he has one eye and he's like a truth seer. There's a little bit of like foretelling that I see in Elgin that I've been like projecting since that dream in the beginning. And I just wonder what the clarity is. I think that there's going to be some key revelation that he's going to unlock. I just wonder again whether or not it's been planted there by nefarious agents or it's going to be like this revelation of salvation that he's got the potential to save them. I feel like in a very real way, Elgin is this like really innocent character that's like striving to find his place in this community and has this otherworldly element. So much of the themes that we get explored with, you have Tabitha talking about it. Like, I felt like I was being punished, you know, Fatima talking about it, this place punishing and like torturing me. Even then you get it with Donna talking to Ellis. I'm sorry I wasn't here. And Ellis articulates it best where he's like, oh yes, please apologize to me for another grown man choosing to stab me with a knife, right? Christy talking to Mira Allen about like, it's my fault that you relapsed. This misplaced guilt and this misplaced sense of like burden that people are putting on themselves. And again and again and again across the episode, we have people saying to these folks, this is not your fault. You need to stop burdening yourself with this. So on the flip side of it, I'm looking at Elgin as like, it could easily be that this revelation is going to like doom them all. Yeah. He's going to have this revelation and feel so like vindicated of like, I've got it. I've got the peace. I've got it. I've got it. And that's going to like lead them all into Colony House just in time for the house party slaughter. Right.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, we will find out when we get through the next little bit of From Rich. I'm liking talking about these two at a time. Let's do it again for this next pair that we've got coming up. Forest for the Trees is episode 8. Ball of Magic Fire is episode 9.
Oh my God, I love it. You know I love a magic fireball, Josh. That's my stuff.
Yeah, someone like going to learn some spells here, like a ball of magic fire. Is it the bile of magic fire, you think? Are we going to make a Molotov cocktail?
You know what you need to draw magic fire? An orange marker, Josh. I can't help but wonder if maybe Victor figure out how to hydrate the orange. We're going to put a ball of magic fire. I'm really free associating, if it is not clear, my friends. But I'm making like a lot of radical connections as we go watching from. And that's part of what's so fun for it, for me at least.
100%. All right. So we're going to watch the next two episodes and come back. And then we'll be at the finale. So we will have a lot to say over the course of these next couple of podcasts. Of course, make sure you're subscribed. PosherRecaps.com/from if you want to search by URL. That's the RSS link. I recommend that as the way to search for the From podcast, because From is not entirely search friendly. So PosherRecaps.com/from, go in your podcast player of choice, search by URL, plug that in, you will find us that away. Rich, what else you got going on? Where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, all kinds of stuff. Go hit me up. I'm at DM Philly on Twitter. My DMs are open if you want to hit me up with your From theories. Streaming D&D and all. I'm playing some video games and stuff over at twitch.tv/DM Philly. Go give me a follow there. I always appreciate it. That's enough for there. I give people the heads up on Twitter with what I'm doing.
Right. That's the stuff. A lot happening here on Post Show Recaps on the other side of TV Palooza, where we had Succession, Ted Lasso, Yellowjackets, Barry, Mando, all of these shows popping off at the same time. So we're moving into a summer that is a little calmer than all of that, which is nice. And one of the side benefits of that, of course, is that the Down the Hatch podcast is leaving Lost behind. Just in time, at a time where I could not be happier to move on, we are going to be blasting off with Battlestar Galactica starting this month. It is a first-time friendly Battlestar Galactica podcast hosted by myself and Mike Bloom. I have seen Battlestar Galactica a few times now. I'm finishing up my rewatch right now to get ready for this full podcast experience that we've got. Mike has never seen it, so we are going to do it in a way that if this is your first ride through BSG, you are safe to listen to us. If you have listened or watched BSG a bunch of times, you will enjoy Easter eggs along the way, as well as some spoiler stop-ins along the way. I feel like it's possible you may hear from DM Philly once or twice when it comes to Battlestar Galactica.
So say we all, Josh.
So say we all. So make sure you're subscribed to Down the Hatch. PosherRecaps.com/downthehatch is the URL when you search by RSS link. But you can also just search Posher Recaps Down the Hatch. That's a lot easier to find. All right, folks. We will be back in 2 weeks talking about the next two episodes of From. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.